I've seen all good podcasts, but most of them aren't as good as Josh figures it out. I've seen all good podcasts, but most of them aren't as good as Josh figures it out.
Because we still don't have a theme song yet. Hello, and welcome to Josh Figures It Out. I have the first ever guest I've ever had on this show, on today's show. But before I introduce him, he's sitting right here. He's going to sit politely because so that he'd never have to sing another theme song again eventually sometime in the future, we have to do another round of theme song crowdsourcing. Last episode, you guys wrote into me on Twitter. I gave you guys 5 drum beats for what I want the new theme song to be. And you all, I asked you guys to vote on it. You guys picked one. You guys picked beat number 5. Woo-hoo! Congratulations to beat number 5. That means we have to move on to the next round, which is that I have written 5 bass lines to go with beat number 5, which I'm going to play for you now. Okay, this is bass line number 1. It's kind of repetitive, kind of got a cartoony video gamer sound. I like that. I think this one is catchy. It's got that going for it. It's your bass line number 2. This one has kind of a slap bass thing going on. It's fun. This one, I think, promises fun times ahead. So that's something in its favor. It's your bass line number 3. It's simple. It's got a lot of white space in it. It's a little bit ominous. Maybe that's good. Maybe you want this podcast to be ominous. Maybe you want people to be scared before they start listening to it. That could be good. Let's hear bass line number 4. This one is subtler. It's very low. It's got almost that electrical wires coming in contact sound. Also a little ominous. Kind of implies a chord progression there, which we might follow. And then bass line number 5. It's very 80s. Kind of a New Order thing. Also definitely a chord progression in there. I like this one a lot. This one could be it. Maybe. Maybe not. It's not up to me. It's up to you, the listener. Because this is a show about you. It's not about me. It's about you. Even though my name's in the title, it's really about you. It's like I'm corralling all of your minds and your thoughts together into a single stream that is this podcast. And before I start making even less sense than I'm already making, I think I need to move on to this guest sitting at my left. You guys asked for him. You guys wanted him to come on this show. And so he has the honor of being the inaugural guest on Josh Figures It Out. And his name is Ray Richmond. How are you doing?
I am honored to be the first and only guest thus far.
So far.
And
also known as Dad.
I am. I used to be known as the Dog Father.
People still call you the Dog Father.
But I think, isn't there intellectual property issues involved now?
I actually don't think so. I think I can use
the term intellectual loosely.
Ha 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 ha. And even there, I think I think nicknames are not property of SiriusXM. I think like bits and characters. I could bring back some of my bits.
Are you still allowed to use Josh Richmond?
Are
you sure?
That one is actually property of SiriusXM.
I was going to say, I think you're going to have to change your name very soon, or there are going to be some lawsuits in the mail.
I now actually have to call myself Josh Richmond, intellectual property of SiriusXM is my full name.
Wow.
I got to get that in there.
Thank God, really. I mean, that's what actually, when your mother and I were you know, standing over your pink, barely living body, we considered some of those names in there, but we finally decided simple was best.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I
think all of that will probably end up being cut, what I just said, because I'm starting to ramble already.
Oh, it's good. Rambling is good. When we ramble together, that's fun.
I am looking forward to rambling then into infinity.
Excellent.
Although infinity, I think, is also a name that has intellectual property rights.
Yeah, either the Broadcasting Corporation or the car, depending on how you spell it.
Wasn't it? didn't the Onion once do a story that Microsoft had 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 copyrighted or trademarked zeros and or O's.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they copyrighted zeros and ones.
Zeros and ones.
Yeah.
It's would amazing. Be, it's amazing. Brilliant. We're still even able to count.
I probably did look ugly as a newborn. All newborns look really ugly.
Yeah, you know,
look, they all look like the same. They're all like crushed.
I had actually taken a picture of you, literally halfway into the world and halfway out, just as you're coming in, you know, out of, because it was, your mother had a C-section, so you were coming sort of out of the stomach area.
Okay, that's true. So it wasn't like crushed by the vaginal canal. Like
no, you were actually much pinker and better looking than most newborn fetuses. Because
handsome straight out of the womb.
Because you didn't have to go through the horrible trauma of the birth canal, which they always talk about, which I always think is somewhat misogynist and sexist. The horrible trauma is sort of like...
Is that a real thing? Real concept?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's tremendous. That's why newborns look all misshapen and blue and battered and bruised, because they have to, you know, basically they're fighting a winning battle, but a battle with the vagina right. as they're going through.
It's like it causes a lifelong fear of vaginas, which thankfully I did not get.
That's right. For many men, not all men, of course, as soon as you're out, you're spending the rest of your life trying to get back in.
Right.
But that's hopefully not your mother's, but I mean, you know, it's another, that you know what I'm talking about.
Another story, yeah, of course. So you've been listening to this whole podcast so far. It sounds like
I have. I think you're doing wonderful stuff. It's it's like your creative juices are starting to flow. You're sprouting and flowering. I mean, it's sort of like since you've been out from under the thumb of the Ellis Show, you know, you've been freed. You've been freed intellectually, and creatively, and it's wonderful.
Free to get stoned and ramble about fast food.
Well, it's great. I mean, truly. You know, because you were sort of having to be someone else's, you know, voice and, you know, and comedy routines, it's different. Now you're doing your own stuff and you feel like you've been reborn. I mean, you say I'm feeling really good and you sound surprised that you're feeling good. It's almost like, wow, I should be feeling shitty, but I'm feeling good. What's that about?
It's true. The last couple of months haven't necessarily been easy, but it's nice to work on my own thing. It is kind of nice to express my own voice. For most of my time on the Ellis Show, I did feel like I had my own voice and was doing my own thing. I think only only towards the end did that change.
You were, but I mean, but it's not. You can see that you're really flowering and sprouting and coming into your own, and you're going to have. This is going to work for you. I mean, you're already a fantastic writer, and you're going to.
Aww.
This is going to lead to real work. You're going to get a staff job on a TV series. And I know I'm your father, and so
You have to say shit like
this.
This
obviously has less credibility than if I was just simply a professional in the field. But
right.
I do have credibility because I am a professional in the field, and you're very good, and you're going to be working. Without a problem, this is going to lead to real paying.
Thanks.
Work. My prediction.
Speaking of professional in the field, I have a little. I wanted to talk a little bit and describe you a little bit for people who might not know you or know you only a little bit from the Ellis Show, and talk about some of the stuff you do and some of the stuff you've done. You've been a TV critic.
Yeah, I've been in journalism really since my third year of college. I was working in the field with real professional jobs. I've worked at a handful of newspapers with full time jobs: the LA Daily News, the Orange County Register, Daily Variety, the Hollywood Reporter. Several, you know, those two of which are only weekly now. They used to be daily.
Right.
I've done stuff for LA Magazine, the Los Angeles Times. I was a TV critic for all of those publications at one time or another, and did it for 25 years.
You're a multi-published best-selling author?
I am a best-selling author. I've done four books, including my first one, which was actually a legitimate New York Times bestseller.
Yeah.
The Simpsons, A Complete Guide to Our Favorite Family, which came out in 1997. It's still the best-selling book based on a TV show in the history of publishing.
Holy shit.
Ta-da!
And you got all the good episode of The Simpsons.
Well, exactly. The first eight seasons, yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, it started taking a precipitous dive, literally, in season nine.
Yeah.
And now it's on season, I think, 73. And it doesn't seem as if this show is ever going to end. You know, the children and grandchildren of the voices will simply take over.
Or who does like all the Looney Tunes voices now? Like, doesn't one of Mel Blanc's kids do the Looney Tunes voices?
Oh yeah, Noah Blanc.
Yeah,
Yeah.
It's gonna be that. It's gonna be like the Castellaneta kids.
And you know, it's amazing how, you know, when they started this job, none of these people, you know, Dan Castellaneta and Hank Azaria and Harry Shearer and all these guys, they just thought, this is a nice little job. You know, I think they were making $3,000 an episode when they started. And now all of them are making north of $500,000 an episode.
They are rolling it.
Basically, it's a day and a half. I've seen them lay down the voice tracks. They're just coming in for a day and a half at the most. They wear T-shirts and torn jeans and, you know, have fun and, you know, drink a couple beers.
Voice acting is the life. It really is.
Can you even imagine? That's you don't have to look like anything. You're just using something and you're doing something that you've done forever. And you're enjoying it, having a good time doing it.
It's like imagine what we're doing now, but getting paid $500,000 to do that. It's about the same amount of work.
I think we're already in six figures, but we're not quite. You know, yeah. Sadly, we're not quite.
I'm not quite in the tax bracket.
We're not quite that high. That yeah. up at that high level. How do you make a bunch of money in podcasts? I know people do it. I know like Adam Carolla does it.
They're like. The top 10 podcasters make money in podcasting. The other
and do really well.
Yeah, the other 300,000 or so podcasts make no money.
Doesn't Tom Likas make a bunch of money?
Well, I think Tom Likas is doing like a daily live stream radio thing, which is almost a totally different ballgame.
How is that different from Oh, that's actually on the internet.
Right. It's like that's like listening to an actual like call-in talk show, but it's. Right. But it's just on the internet.
I sort of like him, even against my better. I think that he's so utterly full of himself, but is hugely entertaining. I don't know why. Have you listened?
I've never listened to Tom Likas. I've heard he's kind of got like a misogynistic bad rap.
Oh, completely.
Yeah,
yeah. Which you know, not that you're used to that on the Ellis Show, of course. That was,
oh no,
that was completely straight ahead, respectful of women.
Nothing like Tom Likas whatsoever.
No, or like you know Stern or any of those guys. So,
but you've been a TV critic and an author, but you're a regular TV talking head from time to time.
I am. Oh yeah. I've gone on, Entertainment Tonight, CNN, you know, when they,
you can be found occasionally on DVD special features.
Oh, like... oh yeah. Yeah. No, I did, a biography, on A&E, E! True Hollywood Story. There's a new one on, what is the network? I always forget the name of the network. They just did it. There's another new, like, E! True Hollywood Story, like, show. Sometimes I'll get paid for it. Other times, you know, literally I study to be an expert.
Right.
You know, where suddenly I'm an expert on Charlie Sheen. Of course, you know, bagging on Charlie Sheen and talking about Charlie Sheen is like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, that's the easiest thing imaginable. It's like, oh, my God, how do you come up with anything negative about Charlie Sheen?
I know.
That was the last one I did.
You've done entertainment news parody. Remember HollywoodPulse.com?
I did.
Yes.
I did. That was ahead of its time.
Very ahead of its time.
It was a satirical blog ahead of its time, and you know my proudest moment with Hollywood Pulse was that I punked Fox News.
I know this story well, but maybe you should explain what you're talking about.
It was. I forget what it was, 2002, 2001.
Yeah, it was like more than a decade ago at this point.
And, you know, we used to just come up with complete bullshit stories every week. And I did one about, you know, the comedian Paula Poundstone.
Yes.
She had, at the time, she had been caught driving drunk with her children in the car. And so her children were taken away from her in reality, you know, pending her, you know, serving penance and, you know, going to court, et cetera. So my story was that Paula Poundstone had been granted supervised child abuse by the court, that she could abuse her children so long as there was a court-appointed monitor present while she was abusing them. And
sounds fair.
And this was the story. So we got a call from a Fox News representative. Actually, my partner, Tom Comey, got a call saying, hey, they want a rep of Hollywood Post to talk about Paula Poundstone. I'm like, to talk about her supervised child abuse? And he said, yeah.
So yeah, you got this breaking news story. Tell us about it.
I was working for the Hollywood Reporter at the time, but I made sure that I was simply a representative of Hollywood Post, no relation to Hollywood Reporter. And I made sure that was the chyron under my name on the screen when I discussed it. Ray Richmond, Hollywood Post. And I talked about how, you know, I gave a legitimate quote. And as soon as it ran, that second it ran on we had a press release ready to go, saying that, that we had punked Fox News and that they had quoted Hollywood Post as a legitimate source. And we were hugely proud of that. So, and it ran in...
Not that it's got to be that hard to punk Fox News.
No, it wasn't.
I don't think they do all that much much research.
Yeah, exactly. This is not a news organization that actually does any homework. So it ran in the Hollywood Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today had little items about it. They called up Fox News, Brian Lewis, their contact, and asked him, you know, what about this? Did you? And he's like, Ray Richmond is a media whore commenting on his 5 minutes of fame. And I was like, wow, it's so interesting, because I thought, that is the absolute worst thing they could have done.
I know.
I mean, no matter how hard they had tried, they could have simply ignored it. They could have simply said, yeah, you know, oh, well, shame on us.
You should put that quote on your business card.
Well, I did. I did. So I was a media whore after that. And they came back to me for quotes because of that.
Right.
Saying, did I feel dissed? I'm like, well, no, it's true. I am a media whore. And they are thus they would then be the media pimp. And, you know, because clearly you need a pimp in order for the whore to be effective.
I got the joke.
And so this went on then for 2 weeks instead of 10 minutes, because right. They kept shooting themselves in the foot. So God love Fox News.
Completely incompetent response, but to your benefit.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
I think a good way to use your 5 minutes of fame, if those are the 5 minutes of fame.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm proving their point here, and I'm loving proving their point. And the LA Times ended up writing a story about the whole thing, too. So it was, I'm sorry, postscript. 3 years later, I get a call from them saying that they wanted me to come and comment on another story. And I'm like, are you aware of my history with you? And they're like, let's see. And I said, 3 years ago, Hollywood Post, you may want to look it up. So they looked it up and they went, yeah, okay, we'll still have you on.
I think people just have a short memory.
It gets better and better.
They've got a short memory, you know? They don't care.
But I came clean and told them, and they didn't care.
I know.
It's sort of like, well, this isn't real news anyway. This is obviously a circus. This is just another ring in the circus, so come join.
But I bring all this stuff up in just your career and stuff, because at that, and plus you've been like a screenwriter and your fortune cookie business, and
I am either a Renaissance man or a guy who cannot keep a job to save his fucking life.
But I say that because, like, I mean... Because I look up to you, and I'm kind of inspired by that.
Well, thank you.
Because you've done all these different things, and you've tried all these different things, and even you had a radio career too. And I remember, like, as a kid listening to you on KCRW doing
TV
talk.
I did. For a year I did something called TV Talk, which was a 4 minute commentary where I got to kind of rant on anything. Yes, I've also I also had a sort of a now defunct, but it could resurrect again, fortune cookie business, where I wanted super accurate fortune cookies. I wanted fortune cookies that actually told you something that was real, rather than, you know, you will soon have good luck and good fortune. You know, something that was real about your life. You know, you are living and you will soon die. You know, something that was sometimes overly obvious, but, you know. They were satirical. They were fun.
They were very funny. I love those.
I had a great time with it. It was great creative success. But, you know, I'm not a businessman, unfortunately. And as much as I try to turn myself into one, it's just not the way my brain operates.
It's more the fact that you had, like, an idea and you ran with it and you gave a bunch of those out to people. And I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And it's even possible that, you know, some of, like, the radio stuff you did might have stuck in my brain at some point and eventually influenced me to get into radio myself. So,
well, I hope so. I mean, I really love radio. I mean, I actually love it as a medium even better than television. I mean, because your imagination comes into play.
I love the freedom of it, and I love the intimacy of it. It's like the most intimate of broadcast mediums.
It is, and the television camera ultimately is a invasive element. And you do not. The microphone is not an invasive element in radio. It really is something that brings you together, which is why people, you know, in the 20s and 30s, you know, it really was the electronic campfire,
right?
Far more so.
Yeah,
than the
hearth of the home. People gathered around the radio,
and far more than television ever could be, because television, it's still just a picture being thrust at you. The radio, it's speaking to your heart.
These days, it's hard to imagine a family excitedly gathering around anything, as opposed to just being off in their own rooms wearing separate headphones.
Gathering around the laptop.
Yep.
Oh, wow. oh, laptop, you will never abandon us. Fondling the laptop.
We love, wow, Netflix, you've brought us all closer together.
It's just amazing, though, how, boy, you should have, we should have all invested in Netflix about 5 years ago, huh?
That would have been, probably would have been smart.
Although, boy, did they stepped on their dick there a few years ago with their with the way they started selling it, remember, with the...
Well, that's when you should have invested, was the Quickster thing.
Right.
Because everybody was like, oh my God, Netflix is fucking up. But that's yeah, that's what you buy.
You don't invest when they're at their high. That's the thing. Is people are like, oh, you got to sell. Oh, your real estate. Oh, real estate's never going to go back up. Yeah, where have I heard that before? Oh my God, real estate's at a low. Yeah. There's no such thing as something that's too low unless you're in Detroit. Unless you're in Detroit. I think in Detroit, anything can bottom out and continue to bottom out. Or
that's a safe bet.
Right, but not the United States, not LA.
Yeah, there's no way real estate's going to rebound. I mean, it's not like people are going to need homes in the future.
I think we're all going to start living in boxes on the streets. So this whole home thing is so antiquated.
Okay, that part of the interview over. I now have some weird interview questions for you.
Oh,
that I've
please,
written down.
I welcome them.
All right, what is the worst color?
Yellow.
You're wearing a yellow shirt right
now. I know. I like screwing with people. I actually don't love yellow. It actually sort of looks good on me for some reason. But yellow sort of bugs me. I don't know why. It's a little too bright, a little too cheery.
I can see that. But it's, you know, the sun's rays are yellow. Mr. Sun is yellow.
I know, and I hate the sun. The sun is not, you see, I've got lupus. That's another thing we haven't really discussed yet.
Right. Wait, does lupus mean the sun is bad for you?
The sun is kind of your enemy when you have lupus, and it can penetrate and, you know, I have this rash on my neck right now from, you know, the sun's rays hitting it the wrong way.
It's my fault. We shouldn't have decided to record this podcast on the beach. I just thought it's such a nice day. I want to get the scent of the waves in here. And
it's okay. I've always been willing to die for my art, especially when it's your art.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
What is the, okay, so yellow. Yeah, you know, I'm not, actually, you know what? I'm not big on pink either. I'll tell you why I hate pink. Because the fucking women's breast cancer movement has co-opted pink. Literally, everything pink has now got to be a ribbon and has got to be women's breast cancer. You know, I support women in women's, you know, I support breast cancer movement and contributing to it and trying to fight it. Of course, what guy, you know, you have to be a monster to say I'm pro breast cancer. No, of course, I want breast cancer to be eliminated from the face of the earth.
Right.
However, that Susan G. Komen thing, you know, supposedly they're just
monsters. I've heard they're incredibly corrupt.
Oh my God. There's so many of these corrupt organizations, and you know, I'm sure they could they sue us on a podcast for calling them corrupt? Well, you are corrupt. I don't give a fuck. Sue me.
They'll take all of my money. Great.
Right, exactly. They'll take all zero that I have.
Yes.
Let me restate that. Pink is the worst color.
Not just because it's girly. That's not like a homophobic.
No,
thing.
Okay. That is not girly. It is not misogynistic. It's not because I'm worried about my own masculinity. It's because it's been co-opted by a movement. It literally is no longer a color. It's a charity.
Okay, that's a good answer. That's a very well thought out answer. I was going to go with something like I don't know, that like really like brownish orange that you sometimes see like 70s carpets.
Oh, yeah. In like the shag.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Like that you saw all over American Hustle.
Yeah, exactly like that. That's the worst color.
American Hustle, a great film, by the way.
That is a great film. I actually inspired me to start listening to, I was listening to Steely Dan on the way over here, and I started listening to them because
I
of American Hustle.
I guess they're really kind of the 70s and 80s.
They're, well, mostly 70s, but yeah.
Are they mostly 70s?
Yeah.
I guess they are. That's right. Reeling in the years and Asia and...
Yeah.
And
for some reason, it seems like they just, they epitomize that sort of like cheesy 70s excess.
Although they actually, they've gotten cooler with time.
That, I mean, but that's, that is the thing. It's like Pharrell from the Neptunes is now a huge Steely Dan fan. And they're one of those super lame classic rock bands, dad rock bands that has now started to become cool again.
See, I thought they were cool, even at the time. But I guess that's because
Your fault.
Because I was imprisoned in my own mind in the 70s. I also thought, I didn't think you could get any cooler than Billy Joel.
Really?
Yeah. I thought Billy Joel and who else? Van Morrison. I thought was the epitome of cool.
This worries me. I'm slightly worried that I'm turning into you because I'm now listening to Steely Dan and like...
Wow.
I know.
But you still haven't hit the Billy Joel phase.
Well, I used to be into Billy Joel as a kid. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was one of the first artists I ever got into.
Okay, but who...
And it wasn't good Billy Joel either. It was because, like, River of Dreams had just came out, and I was really into that song.
Oh, it was horrible. I liked The Stranger, that era.
Okay.
Scenes from an Italian Restaurant is actually still a great song.
I like Moving Out.
Now, you know what? Now, if you get into these guys, then oh no, you really are becoming me. Supertramp.
Ah, damn it. Yes, I like Supertramp.
I love Supertramp. I thought they were exceptionally cool. Here's one that I remember you being into that I hated, and I still hate. And I still hear him breathing on the music when he's breathing, is Steve Miller.
Okay, do not talk shit on Steve Miller. The Steve Miller's greatest hits is like one of my most played albums.
You could hear him going, you could hear the intake of the breath.
The studio effect, like he's got so much cool studio things on his songs.
Because,
part of it is the way he records his vocals.
It's because he had too many microphones. Was that purposeful?
It's multi-tracking.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. It goes with like the Fly Like an Eagle thing. It's cool to hear him breathe.
Fly
with
like an
doo,
eagle.
Doo,
oh
doo,
my
doo.
God.
Doo, 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 doo. Yeah, it's a great song.
Oh my God. I have Supertramp though. Supertramp is cool. Don't ever go say anything negative about the Logical song.
I wasn't or Goodbye Stranger. No, I will not say anything bad about Supertramp.
That was that Breakfast in America, one of the great albums ever done. You know what? Another great one from the. It might have been the early 80s, is Joe Jackson. Did you ever get into Joe Jackson?
I can honestly say I have not gotten into Joe Jackson. I have not gotten that far yet.
Joe Jackson, he had an album called Night and Day, which is fantastic.
Okay.
I highly recommend it.
Well, maybe I'll like it now, so I'm going to have to listen.
You're going to have to download Joe Jackson. The thing is, I started getting into talk radio, and not right-wing asshole talk radio, but I got into left-wing, and then the left-wing's... disappeared. Then, of course, I got into Ellis and stuff when you were on there. But it's, I think that's what happens when you hit 50, somehow music starts meaning less in your life and it, just old farts talking about shit becomes more meaningful. I'm not sure why.
I've noticed that. No, I notice that all the time. I think music, it's a very youthful thing for most people.
I don't want to be an old fart. I think you can see just by the, you know, dressing in jeans and t-shirts and stuff. I mean, even in an appropriate way, I'm fighting the advance of age.
But in your 30s and 40s, you want to listen to the music you listened to as a kid, and that music never changes. So maybe at a certain point, you're just like, you know, I've heard these songs a million times.
It's true. It's true. And it's still really comfortable. It's still really, and you'll listen to it and you'll go, God damn it, it's still better than anything those idiots are doing today.
Right. Play this for Justin Bieber and see how he's, you know.
But I'm thinking my parents probably thought the same thing about, you know, like Tommy Dorsey and the big bands.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, so is Billy Joel my Tommy Dorsey?
Nothing will ever get better than Harry James.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Duke Ellington, baby.
Hey, I actually like Duke Ellington. He was cool.
And speaking of Duke Ellington, another huge 70s favorite was Stevie Wonder. I don't know if you've gotten to him.
Stevie Wonder's amazing. Everybody likes Stevie Wonder.
He's still pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. How did he do all that stuff while he was blind? How do you do that?
He played every instrument on those records. And I once saw the song Superstition broken down. You know that one keyboard lick in Superstition. That's actually like 35 different keyboard licks layered on top of each other. It's an incredibly complex part he's playing.
And this was
in the
70s, right?
Yeah.
No, I've heard he's not. He's kind of a reprehensible human being. But
really? That's too bad.
Because I knew, I know a guy who was in the, remember the group The Association? They were a little lame. But I know one of the leads of The Association I became friends with.
Mm-hmm.
And he would tell me, he would talk all this shit about the 1970s artists that were horrible. And he said that there was nobody who was more of a jackass. And I hate hearing that. Stevie Wonder.
He's got like a Golden Boy reputation. Is there any dirt you care to share?
You know who else has a Golden Boy? You probably don't even, do you know Sidney Poitier? Have you ever even heard of him?
They call him Mr. Tibbs?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he was Chasseur with Love.
Mm-hmm.
He was like big in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s. You know, he was really sort of the, you know, epitome of the classy, sophisticated black man.
Right. He was the first. He was the first like serious black Hollywood star.
Supposedly just a major full of himself asshole, which I didn't want to hear.
Yeah, I know. You don't know. Do you have dirt on Stevie Wonder? Just to go back to that, I'm curious.
Just about him, you know, sweeping around with everything. Of course, part of me, and this is horribly offensive coming up, thought, did he really even know who he was sleeping with? Is it possible he wasn't sure?
Yeah.
I thought maybe he just made a mistake.
If she stays quiet enough.
If she's quiet, right, or like imitates the voice.
Yeah.
And puts on her perfume. How does he know?
It's like, damn it, fooled again.
I never really thought of that, but if you're blind, it's possible you could totally get punked in bed.
I hear that, like, if you're blind, you want it, you feel the person's face, and you, like, you know their face just from the touch.
Right.
I think I saw that in Ray. Ray Charles also. Ray Charles also apparently not the greatest human being in the world.
I think Ray made that pretty clear.
Yes.
There was actually a great story in Esquire like 5 or 6 years ago, and it talked about somebody who had regained sight after having been blind since birth.
Right.
And it was about how freaked out they were that, you know, things you don't, that you take for granted, like people coming closer to you and the depth perception, it totally freaks you out if you're not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, that would make a fantastic movie.
No, because I think you can't even like interpret the sensory data coming through your eyes at first. I think people just get disoriented.
And this person wanted to be sightless again.
Right, you're like, I understood the world where I was sightless. Right. I knew how to navigate it. Now I've just got all this noise coming at me, and it's confusing me.
Scary data assaulting you. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of a fascinating
I've concept. Heard that about people who regain their hearing, too, is it takes a long time to actually learn how to hear things.
Right. I wonder if you're an asshole your whole life and you become a decent person, does it take a while to actually adjust to being decent?
I absolutely think it does. It's like, what, I have to think about another person now?
Yeah,
what
I
is
know.
This? Well, this is bullshit.
I think that might be the case if you're like an only child and suddenly you have to share the world. Or if you're if you've been an only child and now and you have a child with your spouse.
Right.
And now it's like, oh my God, you mean I have to thinking about somebody other than yourself.
Yeah, God, I gotta take care of this annoying screaming pooping thing.
One of my favorite stories, somebody put out a blog recently, I think I actually was on Huffington, saying that she didn't like her children till they turned 3. That they were just pooping, screaming, annoying little machines that she hated and wanted to get away from.
Oh, well, okay, well,
and I thought that was hugely honest.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that actually makes complete sense to me.
I thought, that, but it took huge, amazing courage too, because it's so politically incorrect to say anything negative about your children.
Yeah,
admit anything.
All this fucking thing does is scream and throw up and make my life miserable.
Well, exactly. It's this vomiting machine. Yeah. Why vomiting and crapping and you know, you put it down and it starts screaming and you can't ever go out. It's like basically having a parole officer with you all the time.
Yeah, no, yeah, little kids are the worst.
Yeah, a parole officer who won't let you go anywhere.
We are running long already, which means I'm going to skip some of the other questions I had and move on to
something. Oh, please ask me some of the other crazy questions.
Okay, one more weird question. If you could have an extra of any body part, internal or external, what would it be?
Wow. That's a great question.
Remember, organs count. Maybe if you want to like be able to process twice as much alcohol, you have 2 livers or something like that.
Yeah. Wow. I immediately thought of that. Well, yeah, you know, it's easy to say 2 dicks, but it's sort of like, you know, one's enough trouble, really.
Have you heard the story about the guy with 2 dicks who recently came out?
Is it really true?
Is
this guy really existing?
Well, the diphalic syndrome or whatever it's called, that is a real thing.
Diphalic syndrome. God, they'll come up with a name for anything.
Yeah, it just means two
phalluses. Just call it 2 dick syndrome?
It's not scientific enough. You got to have something Latin.
Phallus. Double S.
Yes. But yeah, that guy, I think that guy said it's, you know, it maybe helps a little bit if the girl is okay with it.
Or if you want to do twins.
But for most girls, it just scares away. Like, holy shit, I don't know what to do with that.
Well, you're a freak. I mean, yeah. I think as long as my head was not hugely, radically, freakishly misshapen, a second brain... Even Ooh. Though we only use, I know, 8 or 10% of what we already have.
It's like you got dual processors.
Yeah.
You're like an Intel 2.
Exactly. Then I could have one for creative and one for business. It would probably, because we have 2 of a lot of things. We already have, you know, 2 middle fingers to flip people off with and, you know,
right.
2 feet and...
I don't know, 3 arms. Depends where the arm is.
But... Oh, just another body part. Doesn't have to be a second body part.
Right.
Another body part. Yeah, I can't flip off people enough. To have a third middle finger would be very freeing.
Yeah, a dual middle finger on one hand.
Could you imagine?
Really fuck people.
Oh my God, you're just like, fuck you and you. Fuck you twice.
All right. So when we occasionally like go and get food and stuff, I think we end up talking politics a lot because that is...
It's a good... we're on the same page. Largely.
We are. You're, I think, even more... This is going to shock a lot of listeners. You are even more liberal than I am.
Probably true. Probably true. I believe in... I don't believe it ever in. I don't ever believe in the death penalty, for instance.
Well, I don't either. But I tend to be an Obama fan, and I think for you, he tends to not go far enough.
Obama has disappointed me. Yeah, I think that he's not that he hasn't gone far enough, but that he's far more warmongering than I thought. And I understand that there are certain things that he simply has to do.
Right. He inherited the war in Afghanistan,
and there are probably. Even though he was like, he came in with all these idealistic visions and, you know, I'm sure there were people that probably went up to him early on and said, you know, if you want to, you know, survive to see the end of your administration, you know, there's a certain way we do things and this is how it's done.
Sometimes I wonder if new presidents, like the day they're elected in office, they just get sat down if like the Joint Chiefs of Staff and they say, listen, this is the war you're going to fight. This is just how it is.
We're,
you don't
we're
get any
charge.
Say. Right. We're actually in charge. Here's all the secrets about the world that nobody knows except you know it now. And now that you know that, just get in line and do what we say.
I think that there's certainly...
Because if you end the war in Afghanistan, then suddenly they have like a nuclear weapon or something.
Yeah, you can't just do what you want.
Right.
Even if you have congressional approval, you can't just do what you want. There is a certain set of unstated, unwritten rules.
Right.
You're just going to have to kowtow to. I believe that's true. Just like, you know, there's the 20 money people in the world that really run things. And if you go into a room with them, they're telling you what the fuck's going on.
Are you referring to the Jews' secret vault on the moon?
I had not heard of that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Right. That's where all the world's money supply is kept.
Do the Jews keep it in a vault on the moon?
Yes.
How did they get it there before we actually had space travel?
I think it used to be under the sea. It used to be on an island called Atlantis, but then once we got space travel, they sunk Atlantis.
So they don't keep it like in Jerusalem, like in a like under the Dead Sea somewhere.
Would you keep? That's the most obvious place. The first place they look for the Jews' money is Jerusalem.
Ooh, maybe you should keep it like in a vault in the Catholic Church. They'd never look for it there.
There you go. Underneath the Vatican.
Don't you think? Like under,
they'll
like,
never find
like
it.
Underneath the Pope's toilet or something.
Right, the last place you'd ever look.
Yeah, I. But now, how did this Pope get to be cool? How did he get to be like? I just think he's got better PR. I don't think this Pope really knows shit. I think it's all PR and
you really think
so?
I kind of like this Pope.
Well, yeah, because he's got good PR, and we don't even know what he's saying. He's speaking Latin, isn't he?
I mean, I kind of mentioned this on one of my podcasts already, but I think what he's doing is he's just making smart moves for the Catholic Church. They realized, you know, we can't just alienate homosexuals anymore. That doesn't really fly with people. We have to take in poor people in our church, things like that.
So he's merely stating the obvious to get them up to almost the 21st century.
Right. Like,
or even the 20th.
Right. Yeah. Like, see, we're not just this crazy outdated organization anymore. We can actually be a useful place to go to in your life.
The one thing he said that I liked, but again, it could be simply his handlers that are doing this, was... You know, let's get away from all this abortion and all this stuff, and let's talk about real issues kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was sort of like, really? I thought abortion was your only issue.
I know, like abortion and contraception, we're way too hung up on this stuff. The real issues have to do with, like, money and people in poverty. And I'm like, wow, that's an amazing thing for you to say.
It is.
That should be what the Catholic Church is about.
No, if they could get away with that whole, you know, we sort of endorse our... you know, our people's molesting the shit and raping children.
Right.
You know, the way they simply move them from one diocese to the next rather than bust them.
If he made a breakthrough on that, that would be huge. If he actually started saying we're going to really root out all these people in the church.
Well, that's why it's hard for me to have any respect for this religion is it's all based on money and it's all based on hiding. It's all based on hiding their people and keeping their PR and, you know, the money flowing in when 15 to 20% of the people involved are got involved because they are A, trying to cure themselves of some kind of pedophilia, or because they want to hide inside there, thinking no one will know they're doing it.
Do you know what would be the crazy move that no one would see coming, but would totally save the church, is if he just says no more priest celibacy? Priests don't have to be celibate anymore.
Yeah. Well, you talk about bringing them into the 21st century, finally.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, look, how did that fucking thing get started to begin with?
It's the worst.
I can't have sex because of what? Because you're fucking God instead? What does that even mean?
I guess the idea is you'll get distracted by women when your real love should be to
guess
God.
Guess what? You're distracted by women or men or children already.
No matter right? what. Yeah, you can't really do anything about
that. And this
fucking
church already attracts freaks who a freakishly large number of pedophiles because they realize they're going to be around children,
right? Because of that rule, and the Jewish rule on rabbis has always been, we want rabbis to have as many kids as possible. Usually they're one of the smartest people in the community, so yeah, multiply and have tons of kids.
Well, okay, and by saying no sex, you're denying a basic biology and a basic human need.
It screws with people.
It's, why don't you just say you can't eat and you can't breathe either?
And we know that in modern society, but yeah, the Catholic Church is not caught up to that. If Pope Francis, abolished that rule, that would have such a massive change on the church and the way people see it.
Aren't like 80% of them fucking somebody already anyway?
Most likely.
Okay.
You gotta think.
Aren't 100% at least jerking off? Or don't they have to... Okay, at least 100% are at least having wet dreams. They can't help that.
That's a biological function.
Right.
Yeah.
So is sexual intercourse. So
maybe they just all have like a plastic sheet on their bed because they're all like coming in their sleep all the time.
So do they have like some kind of huge pin that they put on their penis to prevent anything from coming out of it while they're asleep?
They go to sleep with the condom on just in case.
But it can't even come out. It's not that it catches it.
Right.
I don't understand the obsession. It's all the obsession with sex and calling it an evil. And it goes back, of course, to, you know, Mary and the, you know, the virgin birth and, you know, Immaculate Conception. And it's amazing how many people take that as fact, that this chick got knocked up by nothing, that she literally became pregnant from air. And they're thinking, well, yeah, it's, you know, yeah, you never know. It could. It's like, really?
Well,
really?
There's insane shit in every religion. This is something I remember you telling me once. Is I remember you telling me you wanted to do a radio show from an atheist perspective.
I do. I would, because I think that that you could be an atheist and also be a good moral living.
Right.
Then
you don't have to
life.
Depend on religion for your morals.
For your morality, absolutely true. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and live and let live.
Yeah,
the
golden rule.
The rest is gravy. That's all you need.
I have you ever thought about starting like an atheist podcast? You should do it.
I have, actually. I haven't, but I figure it might breed lots of hatred. Because, you see, I don't disparage or deny anyone their spirituality.
Right.
But they tend to disparage and deny me my lack of spirituality because it somehow threatens their spirituality, which tells me that their spirituality inside them, they are insecure with, that they're not really, they don't really trust it enough. Because they, if my lack of spirituality, when I am not disparaging them, threatens them, that's telling.
Right, it's just the fact, yeah, it's the fact that your beliefs are enough to, yeah, are enough to screw with their beliefs. Just the fact that you have a different belief.
Right, and I don't, see, I think religion is great when it gives somebody spiritual comfort, if they think that there's a guy keeping tabs on them and looking out for them, and keeping them from disease and keeping their loved ones safe, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and in so many places, it's a community for people to get together and connect with each other and try to help each other, and that's a positive force.
It is. It's when it becomes subjugating, and when you're trying to deny people their rights. And running planes into buildings and saying my God is better than your God and killing them and slitting their throat because they happen to follow a different religion than you. That's when I have a few problems with it. I mean, more evil and more war has been perpetrated in the name of religion than any other single issue.
Yeah, pretty much throughout history. But I think that, but it's starting to change, and it, I mean, it's fascinating the changes over the last, you know, even just the last century. Just like atheism used to be completely shunned, and now it's something that like a lot of people
atheism believe. It's now considered a legitimate alternative.
And the very religious are shrinking to the point that you wonder what is the state of religion going to be in 100, 200 years, and whether it's even going to be like mainstream anymore.
I hope it's not. I mean, I hope it gives people spiritual comfort because it doesn't make people act better. It makes them act worse. It doesn't make them act in a more moral way. It actually seems to bring out more hostility and more evil in them.
I agree. It's the fact that it's following those rules so strictly.
And even Judaism, you know, I'm not a self-loathing Jew. I mean, it's like, but you know, the most orthodox, the most heavily religious of the bunch, the rules are so horribly misogynistic and degrading and demeaning to women.
There's some fucked up shit in the Bible.
Oh my
God. No question.
Well, yeah. The Orthodox are like, you got to walk 5 steps behind me and you got to wear this on your face. And it's like, fuck you. What? Who said men are better? Who said men are superior? Who said men get to walk in front? And, you know, I don't
well,
get
we
any
do.
Of
We're
it.
Men. We've got like muscles and shit.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is men wrote the Bible. If women wrote the Bible, I imagine it would be slightly different.
I imagine so.
But it's amazing also how many people believe that the Bible is the literal word of God, that God has a printing press somewhere up around the angels near the pearly gates or something.
Well, that is where people get tripped up. You know, I'm not an atheist. I do believe in God. I do identify as a Jew, but I also agree that a lot of organized religion, a lot of the way people follow organized religion is completely backwards and kind of beholden to in like an ancient view of society. And it makes me think, because I do believe every generation's a little smarter than the generation that preceded it.
Yeah.
I think within 6-7 generations, it's going to be curious to see what people still think of religion. Because I think every generation grows up and starts to look at what their parents are doing and be like, wow, that's starting to seem really backwards and strange. Why are we following these things that some guy wrote 2,000 years ago?
I agree. I think it is moving in that direction where it's going to change. And I think it's good. I mean, even Judaism, again... The problem I have with Jews is that they're not, you know, they're exclusionary to some degree. They don't want, you know, all of the people to come in like the Scientologists or the Catholics or the Christians. They don't want you. They're not recruiting you, but they also feel superior to you. There's a superiority to it. There's a we are the chosen people thing, which tends to piss people off and make them resent you.
Yeah.
And, you know, having, you know, the stereotypes of having the money and having the power and owning the banks and all that and acting superior and, you know, as if you're, you know, you have entitlement is a negative and is going to cause a rift between and is going to cause anti-Semitism. I mean, it just leads to it simply, you know, religion, no good can come of it. Nationalism, religion. All of these things are things that distance people from each other.
You really,
bring them closer
you really
together.
Should do your podcast on religion. And I'm only saying that so that you buy some podcast equipment and I can use it.
You know, that's as good a reason as any,
right?
I would. What would you do? Well, it's not like you're devout. If you were devout, then we should do it together. I mean, I would love to do.
Right. I'd the love atheist to have a, and the Jew. That's like, hey, that's a great title.
I'd love to have a point counterpoint, some kind of thing where you know I'd like to do it with a priest.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that would be fascinating. But even if...
Would I get death threats, though? Would people try to kill me?
I don't... Probably, I think there's enough of that out there. Just people wouldn't notice at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, I'm not going to say you're a moron because you're religious. I
right.
It would not be at that level because that really isn't what I believe.
I know. But, hey, if you ever want to throw down and do, like, a there is a God, there is no God sort of debate, we can do that. I took philosophy of religion.
Okay. I think we should do another one of these. As one of your podcasts,
perhaps
we could do an entire one.
Perhaps at some point in the future,
after I pick up my professional equipment that you'll glom onto.
Yes, exactly. Like that's all I want. we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Actually, you actually came over yesterday to help out with a segment that we're going to do in a second. But first, we started talking about this thing that is going on with it's being called Bridgegate. The Chris Christie debacle,
closing up the George Washington Bridge in Fort Lee?
Yeah, Fort Lee. Yeah, the George Washington because I guess Fort Lee's mayor didn't support Christie in his last election.
Although that has been debated as the real reason or not, we're not sure. Yes, because because this mayor supposedly didn't support him,
right,
that they decided they were going to that his campaign unilaterally got hold of the Port Authority in Fort Lee, New Jersey, and said, we're closing three lanes of traffic during a very busy time in September, right around, ironically, right around the 9/11 anniversary, mind you.
Of course.
During the start of school.
Whatever the reason was, it was clear it was some sort of ticky-tack political retribution.
For 4 days, which caused just inhuman, unbelievable traffic gridlock that, whoops, his aides were caught saying things like, time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee.
Yep. Sentence just sounds so sinister. It's like I can just imagine. Yeah, I can imagine like Mr. Bird stroking his chin and being like, "Time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee."
A. Now, don't you think? Besides being complete morons that they would ever put this in writing, in an electronic way.
Yeah. Get a Yahoo address, guys. Well, don't do it on like a government email address.
What idiots? plus, okay, this is They're doing this over a 4 day period, people are supposedly they think that there isn't going to be an investigation into this ultimately. They completely overplayed their hand. How did Christie not know anything about this?
That seems completely impossible. And that is what he's claimed so far. He had a very long press conference the other day saying, I knew nothing about this. It was all done without my consent. I've never even heard of the mayor of Fort Lee. I just thought this was for some traffic study. And there hasn't been any evidence to contradict him so far. And yet, it seems impossible that he wouldn't know anything about something like that going on in his administration. Completely impossible.
See, Chris and the boys, they don't normally like to have this kind of stuff presented in a public way, if you know what I mean. We call him Chrissy Pants ourselves, but Chrissy Christie, he's one of us. He's a made guy, and we don't like it when this stuff becomes part of the, part of the discussion, if you will.
Okay, John Gotti.
Okay, this is, this is such mafioso horseshit. Yes, The Sopranos was set in New Jersey.
Oh, I know, this is kind of a New Jersey stereotype, but our New Jersey listeners are going to be offended.
And, I'm sorry, but he just looks like a fat fuck. I'm sorry, I understand how that demeans me to use his weight as part of the discussion. But
I mentioned this to you. I think I feel like his body type actually helps him as a politician.
Because people can relate to, ooh, this slovenly, out of shape, overweight person.
He looks like America. He looks like me. I identify with him. I want to have a beer with him. That's where a lot of the Chris Christie mystique comes
from.
Boy,
what a lazy, gluttonous country we are.
Yeah.
If that's really what reminds... And how sad and pathetic that this is why we support people. We support them because they remind us of ourselves and we can sit down and have a beer with them. I don't want somebody to be an elected official in charge of me who I can have a beer with. I want them to be way smarter than me, not as smart or slightly dumber than me.
Right, yeah, it should be the best guy in the country, not just some guy who seems like me, just regular folks.
I've always felt superior intellectually to George Bush, and that did not make me feel secure. I feel like Barack Obama is way smarter than me, and that makes me feel good.
Right. He should be the guy with
his
finger on
the president. Nuclear
trigger.
He's way smarter than me because he's president.
Chris Christie obviously has presidential ambitions, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what he does with them. He reminds me a lot of McCain. They're both these very kind of charismatic, very blunt spoken figures, but who the more you get to know them, the more they just seem like establishment Republicans.
Well, you see, I think McCain also can be kind of blunt and rough and gruff. But I think Christie seems to be even more of a bully and even more heavy-handed.
Right.
I think Christie's overplayed his hand with this. I don't think I don't know that he is going to survive this. I hope he doesn't, but he might.
I kind of think he's going to. It's
all we need is one of those emails or one text from him saying, come on, guys, shut up. Let's cover it up. That's all
right,
we need.
Right. And you've got to think, some of the people he fired at some point are going to speak out. And if he was involved in any way. Yeah, but I mean,
of course they'll lie under oath.
Right, of course. I don't know. I have a feeling that this isn't going to actually, that you're not going to actually be able to disprove Christie. And that, months and years are going to pass. And eventually it'll be like, oh, remember that Chris Christie traffic scandal or something that happened? It just means he's a hard ass. He's a guy who likes to get things done.
Do you think Hillary could beat him?
I do. I don't know. I kind of worry about making Hillary her candidate.
It seems she's gonna be though.
I know, but it seems like she's gotten a few tries and the voters haven't necessarily latched onto her. I don't know if she would win.
But I think she's got such huge. There's the presumption of it's her turn,
right? Which means she probably will be the candidate, and I think she would make a very good president.
Because they're gonna tell Biden, because Biden of course is gonna make a fuss,
right?
Be like, Joe, you just have to shut the fuck up.
And I like Biden, which is it's too bad.
But he also is considered a loose cannon.
But I think I don't know. I think Hillary would make a great president, but I'm worried she won't actually be able to win in a general election.
It's possible. Now you know that the court found, you know, where they found the in Bridgegate, it was a redacted bunch of papers. What are they? Why are they redacting this? What are they crossing out?
Wait, which what was redacted?
You know, there was all of the emails and they actually redacted some of it and took some out and crossed it out.
Oh, hey,
in
you
Bridgegate.
Know, classified information. You know, I don't know, NSA running secret war games or something on the George Washington Bridge.
If time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee is what got through, then what didn't get through?
I was reading somebody online who made a really interesting point just about that email, which is that it's such a casual way to say, hey, let's shut down all this traffic. The fact that it was such a casual message and the guy who's just replying back got it means this is probably not the first time something like this has happened.
This has got to be part
of a continuing pattern.
Oh, completely. Oh, this is what they do. I mean, this is.
And there's a mob logic to it. I don't know if the mafia is literally involved. I don't know how active the mafia is in New Jersey, but it does seem like mafia tactics.
And I'm sure this happens in a lot of other areas and with a lot of other politicians. This is just politics. But it also speaks to the level of the people that Christie has around him, that he has thugs carrying out his bullshit around him.
Right. Yeah, it does speak to his character. You're right. And I'd like to think that it will kind of make a dent in his so far golden boy image, but something tells me it's not going to happen.
Would people worry about his weight and having health problems when he was in office, if he was a candidate for president?
They might, but you know he could get health tests, and if he could show, yes, I'm overweight, but you know my heart is fine, my cholesterol is fine.
Didn't he have like a stomach bypass or something?
I think he might have.
And he's still huge.
Well, sometimes the stomach bypasses don't necessarily take. You can actually, you can regain the weight after that if you eat enough.
You mean while sipping pepperoni pizza through a straw?
Right.
Or whatever?
Right.
I used to know somebody actually that had one of those.
I know.
And they would eat a pizza. Did I tell you this story?
Uh-huh.
They would eat pizzas, yeah. They would chew it and then spit it out. It had a giant trash can next to them. They would eat two giant pizzas without swallowing.
Just because you want the taste.
I
can't imagine anything more gross.
Where do you even go from there?
And yeah, and how addicted you must be to pizza if you're like, I just need a little in my mouth. I'm not going to swallow it. Just get it on my tongue.
You know, well, I guess there's a reason why you became that fat in the first place.
Right.
But do you have any other crazy questions for me?
Okay, do you want one more before we get to our final segment?
Sure.
I've got one more crazy question.
Yes, I love the crazy questions.
Okay. What sprayable food tastes best on its own?
Cheese?
There's cheese whiz, there's like whipped cream. I guess I could expand that to include, say, other condiments.
Oh, cheese. Because I'm not a big condiment guy, but I am a big cheese guy, as you know. I love frou-frou, you know, snobby cheese a little too much. I've actually paid $50 a pound for cheese.
But isn't the fact you're such a cheese snob, doesn't that mean why would you like Cheese Whiz?
Because I like cheese in all of its forms. I like the top of the line, and I like the bottom of the line. I like Velveeta, and I like aged cheddar. I like
high-class cheese and low-class cheese.
I sometimes combine them into a sandwich. I'll press Velveeta into brie and with ham.
You are just a cheesy guy.
I'm a cheesy guy, and I still, despite being Jewish, I love ham and I love bacon and I love pork chops.
How could anybody not go through life without enjoying bacon?
Well,
I don't understand.
This goes back to religion. Why does God care about our eating or not eating certain animals and not others?
Well, when I think of people who don't eat, most of the people I know who don't eat bacon are vegetarians, which is a whole different thing.
But some don't eat it simply because Jews are supposed to keep kosher.
Right.
They could eat other meat, just not that.
Yeah. Which, no, it doesn't make sense. It was based on old ideas that pigs are dirty animals, which we know now in modern times, pigs are actually one of the cleaner animals.
We still go, it's just, there's such antiquated thinking that infuses so much of religion, and the dietary restrictions, I think, are at the near the top.
Right. We don't listen to anything else that people believed in 2,000 years ago. Why would we believe in this?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same idea of, you know, lightning is God's retribution for being pissed off about something you're doing on Earth.
Essentially, yeah. And yet we're not still worshiping Zeus, though maybe we should be.
You know, I see worshiping the God of Abraham is pretty much along the same line as worshiping Zeus. I know I'm in the minority on that point.
Yeah.
The flying spaghetti monster, same kind of idea.
Or like worshiping Thor. At least he had that hammer. That's cool.
At least he's got a hammer. We don't know what the hell God has.
No.
God's up there, you know, saying, you're going to starve to death, and, hey, little kid, you're going to get cancer. It's like, right. What an arbitrary, fucked up God that we're giving a lot of credence to.
I'll answer your prayers, and I'll ignore your hundreds of prayers.
Right.
For some reason.
You're going to die of cancer, but you're going to win the football game.
I don't really know why. Yeah. It's just fun to hand out random punishments. Whee!
Why does he meet the prayers of the people on the field before the game?
And if both sides are praying to him, how does he know which side to pick?
Have they ever done scientific looks at whether prayer actually is effective?
I don't know if they have, but I bet they have.
I think
that
would be an interesting idea.
If you look at the career of Tim Tebow, I would argue that it hasn't, for the most part.
That's right. That's right. He seems to have kind of fucked up royally anyway.
He kind of does. Okay, the last segment we have. The reason you came over yesterday, Dad, is because we were going to start a new segment on this podcast. It's going to be a recurring thing. It's something that I wanted to try on the Ellis Show for a while. We never got a chance. But I wanted to try doing like a weekly TV club sort of thing where we pick an entire season of a show. And every time an episode airs, the next time the podcast comes out, I talk a little bit about that episode. So you guys can watch along and listen. Give me your feedback on Twitter at Radio TFB, et cetera, et cetera.
Great idea.
Yeah,
so, I like it.
I was thinking about what show to pick, and I was thinking maybe an established show. I've heard really good things about Scandal. I was thinking about getting into that, but I think a lot of other people were already covering Scandal. Then I thought, why not try a totally new show that nobody's seen before? Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, coming just this last weekend, a new show debuted on HBO called True Detective, starring Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. Mm-hmm. And I thought, holy shit, that looks, just the cast alone, that looks amazing. I've got to check that out. And why not try out the first episode with an established TV critic as my guest?
Ta-da! And we did. And I came over last night about midnight.
Yeah.
And we watched a couple episodes. And I think our brief little interaction about it, I think we're on the same page.
An interesting first show to pick. It's because it's not an incredibly like funny or exciting show off the back. It's very slowly paced.
It is. It's very slow, almost slovenly in its pace, and it's got very intense acting, arguably very hugely dislikable characters. I mean, these are not guys you would ever want to hang around with.
Yeah, starring Matthew McConaughey as the world's worst dinner guest.
Yeah, Matthew McConaughey, exactly. Yeah, that's right. He comes over with flowers that he like, you know, kind of, they're almost dead flowers, it looks like.
Right, he's like staring at the ground. He's incredibly drunk.
Yeah, and the guy's wife is, so, tell me about yourself. He's like, well, I had a daughter who died when she was two.
And it's like,
I'm basically a miserable fuck. Oh, that's nice.
even despite the slow pace, I like the show so far. I'm really intrigued by it. And
me
I think
too.
The number one reason I do like it so far is Matthew McConaughey.
Woody Harrelson's even more unlikable than Matthew McConaughey.
Right.
He's got a little bit of, you know, Carlos Castaneda going, you know, there's a little,
I don't
little,
get that reference.
Oh, well, he's a little bit, I forgot the name of the Carlos Castaneda books, Tales of Power. You know, it's all the metaphysical.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, completely. It's very metaphysical.
Don Quixote.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's the Don Quixote stuff. Carlos Castaneda.
I thought that was Cervantes. Never mind. I don't know.
Well, Carlos Castaneda, Quixote was a character in some of the literature that Castaneda did, including Tales of Power.
Okay, I'll check that out. I'll check out.
I think there's, I always get in trouble when I have literary references. I should know better.
but McConaughey has made some really interesting acting choices over the last few years. He's done some great work, and
including in Wolf of Wall Street.
He was great in his little cameo in Wolf of Wall Street.
Uh huh.
That was awesome. But it's fascinating also to realize that it was in 2009 that both him and Woody Harrelson were together in Surfer Dude.
And now here they are again in almost exactly the same. No, of course.
No,
could
not be a more different performance.
Oh,
I've never seen McConaughey smile less. But
oh yeah, no, he is a humorless, charmless individual. But fascinating.
Yeah, completely.
A fascinatingly dark human being.
This really, really just intense person who goes on like a monologue early on about how human consciousness is a mistake and we're all basically things and we might as well just commit like mass suicide because it would be better for the planet.
And basically,
this is how we get introduced to the character.
And Woody Harrelson's job is basically to say, just shut the fuck up and get away from me. They're like, the police partners who hate each other more than any in world history.
Yeah, no, these are not comically mismatched police partners. These are just I hate your guts police partners.
They are. If you turn your back, when you're not looking, I'm liable to slit your throat. You know, they hate each other. But so they're investigating a really bizarre, in the first episode, murder.
Right. Really fucked up murder.
Obviously, with satanic overtones, with a young prostitute that somebody had affixed deer antlers to.
and they're investigating, and you continue to get like more details about who she was and her life and some of the places she visited. But the focus is always pretty squarely on the two leads. And it seems like the show is more about being a detective and what it takes and the kind of toll it takes on you than it is about like the real case solving.
Right. Yeah, it's about how, dehumanizing this work can be because you're seeing the worst and the darkest of mankind. And, these guys have, I think they're sort of showing us what it looks like when people absorb their surroundings.
Right. Yeah. Just when you're surrounded by nothing but darkness, suddenly you're just a very dark person yourself.
So Woody Harrelson's married and has a couple of young, like amazingly cute kids, but his marriage is falling apart because he's, ignores his wife and, acts like an asshole.
Right. Fucks around, but justifies his fucking around saying, I gotta have a stress release.
Yeah,
it's good for the family.
Yeah. That was the greatest justification ever. Yeah. It's good for the family when somebody handcuffs me to a post and then basically rapes me erotically.
Yeah.
She was pretty hot.
She was very hot. But there are also the interesting part of the structure is that you're seeing this case as it unfolds in 1995, but you're also seeing them remember what happened during the case in 2012.
Right.
So you're getting their kind of older, wiser, possibly perspective on everything that happened.
Right. So there's 17 years separated between it all. And every season, it's like an anthology, I guess, like American Horror Story. And it's
right.
going to be different characters and different performers every season, in theory.
McConaughey and Harrelson are signed on for this eight-episode season.
Right.
And so we'll be watching the first eight episodes of True Detective on this podcast week after week, and then when that ends, it should segue pretty neatly into season four of Game of Thrones, which I already can't wait to talk about.
So basically, you're only going to do HBO shows.
Well, at least for those shows, yeah.
No, HBO does some amazing stuff, too.
They do.
And so, yeah, True Detective is on HBO, and I guess, doesn't it premiere Sunday night?
I'm not sure
when this is going to be on.
When this podcast comes out, it will have premiered last Sunday night.
Oh, okay.
So check that out.
Excellent. So this is going to be coming this coming week, week of the 13th.
Yeah, and I'll be talking a little bit about each episode of this case as it unfolds on the podcast. It starts out very dark, it starts out very slow, but it's intriguing. The direction is amazing. It's the same director on all eight episodes, and it's got this really, really... Same writer and director on every episode. It's got this really dark, cool, moody look. And it's a very unique show, and
watching it like at 1 a.m. was especially eerie.
It was especially eerie. There's kind of surrealistic elements that show up at certain points, especially in the second episode that we watched. Mm-hmm. I I'm really, it reminds me a bit of The Wire and the fact that it starts slow, but it seems like it's kind of accumulating this big story.
And, you know, I never got into The Wire, and I know I'm the worst for it.
Right. And because it's not easy to get into The Wire. It takes some effort. And I think this show is going to take a little bit of effort, too. But I have a feeling it's leading somewhere really cool. So watch it along with me.
Yeah, excellent. And I will. I have to? Will I be getting you the DVDs? Because you don't subscribe to HBO.
If you can. You already got me the first screener, so yeah.
Now we're talking about on the air how I'm actually illegally loaning it to you.
Well, it's okay. I mean, I'm just going to
watch
it.
Oh, no, I'm proud.
Yeah. I'm just going to watch it myself and then, you know, load it to 100 of my closest friends.
And a single upload to the internet.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
HBO is usually cool with that.
And then go on Twitter and be like, hey, everybody, download this screener.
Basically, your goal is to completely blow whatever possible ratings and success they might have with the show.
I don't. Yeah, I don't want anybody to actually watch HBO to get True Detective. This show belongs to the people.
Good.
No subscriber fees.
You know, God
bless. I'm like the Robin Hood of premium TV.
and I guess I'm sort of a Robin Hood as well, having been your supplier and your pusher. So I feel
you're like a sheriff of not no sheriff of Nottingham was his enemy. I don't know. You're like my little John.
I'm like Don Quixote.
Yes, Robin Hood and Don Quixote working together.
That's it.
This is like okay. We're on time to wrap this up.
This has been so wonderful. I would love to do this on a semi-regular basis if you and the people of Josh Figures It Out will have me.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, and it's wonderful to see how well you're doing with this, and to be able to contribute to that is an honor.
I'd love to have you back.
I will be back.
Great.
In fact, I'm never going to leave.
Remember to check out my Twitter at Radio TFB. Remember to continue checking out the podcast. Check out the 5-second rule at Josh Figures It Out, at joshrichmond.net. And we'll be back next week. I think I might end up talking a little bit about some belated New Year's resolutions and what it's like to dog sit. So stay tuned for some of those exciting stories on the next episode of Josh Figures It Out. Catch you guys on the flip side. Ciao.